National.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the April 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to French football star Kylian Mbappe, who had two goals Wednesday to lead visiting Paris Saint-Germain to a big 3-2 road victory against defending champion Bayern Munich in the first leg of their UEFA Champions League quarterfinal. Our VOA football fans will remember the 22-year-old Mbappe has strong ties to Africa. His father is from Cameroon, and his mother is from Algeria. In the third minute, Mbappe's powerful low drive squeezed through the legs of Bayern goalkeeper Manuel Neuer, and Mbappe sealed the win with his eighth goal of the competition in the 68th minute. The Cameroonian Choupo-Moting and Thomas Muller had the goals for Bayern Munich. Now, Kylian Mbappe was a constant threat during the match, while Brazilian star Neymar had two assists for PSG. The French champions responded positively to their 1-0 loss to Bayern in last year's UEFA Champions League final, and they also seized the advantage going into the second leg in Paris next week. The German champions, meanwhile, are left wondering how they failed to earn at least a point. They had 31 goal attempts to PSG 6, 15 corner kicks to PSG's 1, and a batch of golden opportunities. In Seville, Spain, opportunity knocked for Chelsea, and the London-based football club took it. Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell scored a goal in each half as Chelsea defeated Porto 2-0 in the first leg of their UEFA Champions League quarterfinal. Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel praised his team for overcoming the shock of Saturday's 5-2 Premier League loss to West Brom.
We had a lot of good results in a row, so we had a very bad result in the first loss last Saturday, and it was the first chance to bounce back and to show a reaction. So, you know, it was a tough match because Porto was very, very strong, and we suffered a bit because I felt us a little bit tense and not precise enough and not free and not courage enough during the first half. So we made life was hard for us because Porto showed a lot of quality, and we absolutely accepted that we need also a bit of luck to escape with a 2-0 today and to escape with a clean sheet. But after conceding on last Saturday and after losing such a strange game, it was we said today in the coaching staff the best situation would be to escape straight and to be capable to produce a clean sheet straight away.
That's Thomas Tuchel, the German manager of Chelsea Football Club, and he was speaking in Seville, Spain, after Wednesday's 2-0 victory against Porto. Now, next week's second leg also will be played in Seville because of travel restrictions related to the coronavirus pandemic. In more football news, the sports international governing body FIFA has suspended the national federations of Chad and Pakistan amid disputes about how they should be run. The suspension for Chad comes after the African country's government tried to dissolve the National Football Federation and appoint new officials to run the sport. And the Pakistan Soccer Federation was suspended for what FIFA described as third-party interference after a group of officials and protesters occupied the Federation's headquarters last month. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Sporty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, five-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
World Athletics recently launched the first 3D virtual sports museum. It's an up-close, personal, and immersive experience for online visitors. The museum is hosted by the official World Athletics website, and you can check it out at this address, worldathletics.org/MOWA. That's M-O-W-A. Once again, the address, worldathletics.org/MOWA. That's M-O-W-A. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to the energetic Andy Edwards and his feature on the Museum of World Athletics. Sporty greetings, Andy.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The Museum of World Athletics went online on March 15th, launched by the World Athletics president, Sebastian Coe, himself a double Olympic champion in the middle distances. This site will grow through the course of the year, expanding into what should be a treasure trove of historic memorabilia. It was fitting that the launch came 1 week after International Women's Day, since it included the presentation of a heritage plaque for the late Greta Weitz of Norway, the first ever world champion in the women's marathon and winner of 9 New York Marathon titles. There'll be more about her and the charismatic coach who guided Australia's Herb Elliott to greatness in the mile and 1500 metres in a moment. But first, here's Sebastian Coe on how MOWA, the Museum of World Athletics, online will develop this year.
Looking ahead in July this year, the second stage of MOWA will be opened with our Olympic Athletics Collection Room. Then in the autumn, indoor athletics, cross-country, road running and race walking will be highlighted with the launch of our indoor and out-of-stadia collections room. It is the 3D technology which makes the Museum of World Athletics unique. MOWA is designed to look and feel like a real building. The visitor can roam around the museum freely and interact with over 60 exhibits and more than 400 items of supporting content, text, photos, and video. The museum platform, which is located on the World Athletics website, has content in both English and French.
When Greta Weitz was a junior international on the track and cross-country for Norway in the 1970s, women didn't have longer distances such as the 5 and 10,000 metres on the track, nor were there any championship titles at stake for them in the marathon. Weitz lacked the finishing speed to be a title threat on the track, but a marathon debut in New York in 1979 aroused her curiosity. Her husband, Jack, was a decent standard club runner himself and advised her in what turned out to be a career-changing victory, the first of 9 in New York City.
We never talked tactics. We had no idea about marathon. I told her the day of the marathon that she should just stay behind the other girls. It's going to be slow for you, but it's going to hurt. And of course, she didn't listen and she took off and she was really, really in pain. the last 10-12K, and she broke the record, ran 2:32, and she was stormed by the US media. She wasn't used to win races in Europe, but this was different. But she was so angry at me that I had talked her into misery, so she threw the shoes at me and said, that's it, never again.
In 1983, the first of what has become a sequence of so far 17 world championships in athletics was held in Helsinki. By then, Greta Weitz was the established number one. Elite women and mass runners were out on the roads and competing in unprecedented numbers. Now, Joan Benoit of the USA dashed her hopes of becoming the first women's Olympic champion in the marathon in Los Angeles the following year. But Weitz, who was sadly to die of cancer at the age of 57 in 2011, had made a lasting legacy for the sport. Sebastian Coe, who shared a platform with Jack Weitz during the online launch, reflected on Greta Weitz's achievement. Seeing her as part of a long line following such Olympic stars as Fanny Blankers-Koen of the Netherlands and the USA's Babe Didriksen.
I put her contribution in our sport alongside athletes like Fanny Blankers-Koen, Babe Didriksen in 1932 in LA, Irina Shevinska, you know, Wyoming Tyus. I mean, these are absolute standout athletes, and for what she did to globalize distance running for women was absolutely inseparable from our history. So, Jack, it goes without saying, we're incredibly grateful for the donation. And we're equally pleased to have been able to just reflect on her career and mark it in our wonderful new museum.
A second heritage plaque was awarded to a coach, the figure who so often proves a catalyst in an athlete's career. Percy Cerruti from Australia was an uncompromising thinker who nurtured above all the development of Herb Elliott, who won the Olympic 1500 metres in Rome in 1960, breaking the world record as he left rivals trailing. Cerruti, who died at the age of 80 in 1975, was in many ways ahead of his time in terms of nutrition. Well, there was nothing easygoing about his self-made running camp on the sand dunes in Portsea near Melbourne. He developed an approach which was part Spartan in simplicity, part philosopher in its quest for greatness. And here is Herb Elliott on his mentor.
I would not be what I am or where I am if it hadn't been for him. The accident, the lucky accident of meeting Percy Cerruti when I was 17 or 18 years of age, still at school. And at that age where you want to smoke cigarettes and I hated school. Once you get out of there, have a few grogs, go out with your mates, all that. You're at that age of 18 where you don't quite, you could go anywhere. And Percy came into my life and took me where I went. He was like a father. I lived in a small little apartment in Melbourne when I first met him. He lived in a house that was the size of a garage. And he had his bed and his cooking stuff and everything in there, and he had me. I used to turn up every night to eat with him because his wife was a really good cook. And there you are. We had a lot of time together, Percy and I, and he was a very, very tough, very ruthless, very positive man, but at the same time, he was a highly inspiring, and he would just inspire us so much. You'd hear him talk. He would go and shake the trees and, you know, shake the world, and he was fantastic.
Sebastian Coe and Herb Elliott, during the museum launch, joked that their chat was turning into a mutual admiration society, but both have earned their laurels for their exploits on the track. If more recent fans of track and field are less familiar with the magnitude of Herb Elliott's achievements, Sebastian Coe, winner of the 1500 gold at the Moscow Olympics of 1980 and again in Los Angeles 4 years later, put them in context.
You are the person that I've always looked to in my sport. I still think your 1500 metre run in Rome was the definitive run. To break a world record and to win an Olympic title in such a definitive way was really the template that I just drew heavily on for the rest of my career.
World Athletics set up its heritage department in 2018, and MOWA is a big step forward in public access online. By the end of this year, many more items will be available online for viewing, and the history of the number one Olympic sport will be set out in ever greater detail. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy! Uganda resumed rugby league games last month, but much of the excitement was on the sidelines, where a unique snack has a popular following. Halima Athmani tells us more from Kampala, Uganda.
TOP Stanawego has arrived early at the Chadondo Rugby Club since 2008 to prepare for one of the most popular aspects of the game, boiled cow hooves, known as chigere. She says, I brought this business here because rugby players love to eat the cow hooves. She says, my son also plays here. It helps them. She says, when they leave the field, they come here and eat. Nabayego's son, Ronald Kanyanya, plays for Uganda's top team, the Heathens. After a year off due to the COVID-19 pandemic, rugby resumed in March, and with it, the unique snack his mother introduced to the game over a decade ago.
People really wanted chigere, to eat chigere, but they had no one to cook chigere. So as we were chatting with my coach, I was like, you know what? My mom can cook. And she was like, okay, let's try it this weekend. And then she came, she cooked, people liked it.
After players clash on the field, they tackle Nabayego's chigere.
It's something that every rugby player thirsts for when they finish playing the game of rugby. It brings back life. It's a very delicious meal that no rugby player can miss out, or anybody who comes here at Chadondo Rugby Club.
Some rugby supporters are also addicted to the dish. For the past 9 years, rugby fan Ian Kafuko has never missed the chance to eat chigere while watching the game.
It's good for my health. I do some weightlifting, so it's good for my bones and it's good for the blood flow, the joints. Huh? Yeah, that's why whenever I come here, I have to take chigere. It's very, very delicious and I don't go anywhere else.
With the return of rugby, Ugandans have more than one reason to celebrate. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ugukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist, African record holder, ranked the best quarter-miler in the world, 1998. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and afford contacting COVID-19. Thanks.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. Coming up, retired U.S. Army General David Petraeus, who commanded the 101st Airborne Division in Iraq in 2003, will ask the general his thoughts about the most salient national security threats and the U.S. military footprint in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sporty greetings. I'm Ogo Daudu, head coach of Rivers Hoopers Basketball Club of Port Harcourt. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. Rivers Hoopers is one of 12 teams preparing for the tip-off next month of the Basketball Africa League's inaugural season. A two-week tournament is planned at the Kigali Arena in Rwanda from May 16th to May 30th. Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo-Fall has been talking with the Voice of America this week about the BAL. Amadou says he's looking forward to the games in May.
I am extremely excited. I mean, you know, just
Look, I mean, it's been a long wait, but it's all worth it because we just didn't sit in our hands. Even though we were not able to tip off in March last year, we really used the time to get involved when the pandemic hits. You know, we've ran programs to support NGOs that were working to really elevate communities. And for example, in Senegal, we partnered with Alima. It's an alliance of, medical professionals to help healthcare workers with equipment, and also in other organizations where we contributed in providing needed resources to really get these less fortunate communities to help get them through the difficulties of the pandemic. And, you know, we've stayed engaged with our teams through, for example, the NBA Together platform. We ran something similar with BAL Together, just to stay connected with our fans, continue to push young people to stay motivated, even though it was tough to stay home and doing everything online. You know, then we found innovative ways to stay connected and to keep the fans engaged around the game, and also all the social initiatives that were being carried on.
That's Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall. And Amadou was speaking with the Voice of America in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Sporty greetings. This is Ike Diagu, captain of the Nigerian men's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In National Basketball Association action Wednesday night, Brooklyn Nets star Kevin Durant returned from a 23-game injury absence to spark his team to a blowout victory. The AP's Mike Mancuso reports from New York.
The Nets scored 43 second quarter points and went on to crush New Orleans 139-111. After missing 23 games with a hamstring strain, Kevin Durant returned. He came off the Nets bench and scored 17 points on 5-of-5 shooting with 7 rebounds in 19 minutes.
I expected to come out here and play the way I played. I wasn't trying to ease into the game. I just wanted to go out there and dive right into the action. I mean, the game was already fast-paced already, so from watching it from the bench, I knew exactly how I needed to approach it.
Brooklyn had 7 players in double figures, paced by Kyrie Irving, who had 24. The Nets improved to 36-16. They've won 9 straight at home. Eric Bledsoe had 26 for the Pelicans, who fell to 22-29. Mike Mancuso, New York.
Thanks, Mike. Now let's go to the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, where the Phoenix Suns beat the Utah Jazz 117-113 in overtime in a matchup of teams with the 2 best records in the NBA. Phoenix guard Devin Booker scored a team-high 35 points.
Both teams played very hard, defended very well. It was just a battle throughout. So, you know, it was really fun to be a part of it. Probably the closest to a playoff-type atmosphere that I think that we face this year.
Meanwhile, Utah guard Donovan Mitchell scored a game-high 41 points.
They're going to be nights like this. We haven't shot the ball well the past 2 nights, you know, and, you know, 2 totally different games, in my opinion. You look at tonight, we were right there, you know, a few rebounds away. And then last game, you know, we were down by 20 at one point.
Donovan Mitchell and the Utah Jazz have the NBA's best record, 38 wins and 13 losses. And the Phoenix Suns, with their victory over the Jazz Wednesday night, improved to 36 victories and 14 defeats. That puts Phoenix 1.5 games behind Utah in the NBA's Western Conference.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Sporty greetings. This is Chairman Christian Chukwu, former captain of national team Green Eagles, former coach of Super Eagles, former coach of Kenya national team, former coach of Safa of Lebanon. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. A Belgian football star has signed a new contract extension with Premier League leaders Manchester City, as we hear now from VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Kevin De Bruyne joined Manchester City in August 2015 in what was the second most expensive transfer in British football history. Since then, the Belgian footballer has been described as a complete midfielder and one of the best players in the world. When his new contract with Man City expires in 2025, De Bruyne will have been with the club for a decade. And on Wednesday, the 29-year-old said he has extended his contract with a team that feels like home.
I feel proud because I've been here now for 6 years, and obviously this feels like home. It's been the longest time that I've been at a club is here, and to get the extension now at my age feels also like very proud moment, because obviously it means that they trust me until I get really old in football terms. So I feel really happy, and my family is also really proud, so that's really, really nice.
De Bruyne began his professional career at Genk and was a regular player when they won the Belgian Pro League in 2011. He then transferred to English club Chelsea before signing with Wolfsburg in 2014, where he established himself as one of the best players in the Bundesliga. But his career highs have come during his time with Manchester City. Since signing with the club, De Bruyne has won 2 Premier League titles and lifted 1 FA Cup and 4 League Cup trophies. And last season, he became the first Man City player to be awarded the PFA Players Player of the Year. De Bruyne says his achievements with Man City have far exceeded his expectations.
I think when I came here, obviously, it was with big expectations, and I think it exceeded every expectation from every part. And to be able to compete at every cup competition, every title, every Champions League, every cup, to be there and do it in the right way for me, do it in the way that we play, still excites me. And obviously I wouldn't know why I would change that.
Man City look to be on track to achieve a quadruple this season. They currently have a 14-point lead at the top of the Premier League, and they are set to play in the FA Cup semifinal and League Cup final later this month. And things are also looking good in the UEFA Champions League. On Tuesday, De Bruyne scored the opening goal in their 2-1 victory over Borussia Dortmund to help give Man City the advantage going into the second leg quarterfinals. De Bruyne's performance on Tuesday has been described as sensational, and the midfielder says his time with Man City has pushed his skills to a higher level.
They pushed me to get to this level. It's not easy to compete all the time with these players, and they're so good, but they helped me in a way to perform the best that I can be. And and then it's a mix of everything that helps me be who I am, and I get to do what I do best, and that's be on the pitch and help the teammates win.
So far, De Bruyne has scored 65 goals in his 255 games for Man City, and he says he's not done yet.
No, I've been really fortunate here. When I came here, we had a good team, and over the years, a lot of players changed, but I remained, so that's a good thing. And we've won a lot of trophies, and the team is really good. The way that we play excites me, and that's the way I want to go forward. So it's not difficult in the end for me.
De Bruyne still has 2 years left on his current contract, but Man City wanted to make sure they retained his services until 2025. Their next Premier League match will be against Leeds United on Saturday. And next week, Man City will face Dortmund for their second leg Champions League quarterfinal match. Man City heads to Dortmund with a 2-1 advantage. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. And that wraps up the April 8th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.